Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's part-time minister. Sometimes I do the service, sometimes people from within the congregation do it, sometimes folks from outside the congregation do our services. That is all by way of saying if this is one of your first times here, please come back and try us out again because our services are different from Sunday to Sunday. There will be a point later on in the service when we will invite guests and visitors to introduce themselves if they want to. We welcome you no matter where you are on this journey of life, this spiritual, sacred journey. We welcome you no matter the color of your skin, your gender identification, your sexual orientation, no matter your abilities or disabilities, you are welcome here as we strive to be open-minded and open-hearted. Today's offering will be shared with the Tenet Resource Center. You can learn a little bit more about it in your order of service. Announcements, other announcements. Do you feel like writing a message to our lawmakers in response to the school shooting in Florida? Mary Mullen has brought postcard stamps and Washington, D.C. addresses of our four congressional people. Thank you, Mary. She'll even mail them for you. I'm not optimistic that it'll do any good, but I am a tiny bit more hopeful this time. Tired of saying this time. Because of the kids and the way they're speaking out. So go teenagers. The opening words are these. Come in from the cold. Make yourself a sacred home, if only for these brief moments, in spite of time, which shall soon bear us away from one another. Make this a family. Treat us as your own. Make us a religious, sacred, spiritual family, if only in this space, which we make sacred by our connections here and beyond. Come on in. Make yourself at home. Sing and love life. The reading I want to share with you is by Robin Landerman Zucker. And I couldn't give you the title because it would kind of give away a punchline. She writes, like many UU families, the interfaith Zuckers attended at least one Passover Seder every spring. We also lit Hanukkah candles each December on Grandma Esther's hand-me-down menorah. Rituals for both holidays include the traditional Jewish prayers, which begin, Baruch Atah Adonai, blessed art thou, O Lord. Many Seders ago, my then 9-year-old daughter, Michaela, who has been known to charmingly fracture many a phrase, intoned clear and loud as a bell, Baruch Atah Illinois. Blessed art thou, Illinois. Needless to say, we all laughed ourselves silly. It is amusing, though, to ponder whether the Prairie State might actually be more sacred than, say, the Buckeye State, the Pine Tree State, the Show Me State, the Gopher State, or the Mass Bay Colony, or, what are we, the Badger State. But it isn't. Sacred space is where you find it, where you feel grounded and at home and blessed. No pun intended, but it's a state of mind, so to speak. Yes, Illinois is surely the promised land for someone, Lake Michigan, as holy as the Jordan. But maybe when you consider hallowed ground is that quiet, or what you consider hallowed ground is that quiet, shaded corner in your yard where you can inhale the essence of spring. It could be that cafe where you commune with friends over Cabernet and crusty bread, or that down east lake where you exhale a litany of sighs, or on the front porch swing at grandma's gliding back and forth in a rhythm as familiar as an old-time hymn. So, blessed art thou, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maine, Ohio, Wisconsin, the window seat in the living room, a favorite aisle seat at the movie theater, a sticky bleacher at Fenway or Miller Park, that dependable tree branch, the choir loft at your church, the community hall of your fellowship, the grove at Ferry Beach. Blessed art thou, all the Chicagos of our hearts, where we feel at home and connected. Blessed art thou, all the sacred spaces, all the promised lands we will create and inhabit together in the days to come. Well, after months of planning, emailing, finding compatible schedules, the plan went into action. And I would like to just say before I forget that Penny reminded me, and I kept forgetting too, that this is sort of serendipitously, is that a word?
Serendipitously.
Thank you. Serendipitously. The first in a series of this year's theme brought to you by the program committee. We realized last Sunday in the discussion time that we needed to be a little clearer about the fact that A, we have a theme, and B, when we actually are doing it. We don't follow the theme every week, of course. This year's theme is, and anybody from the program committee, I'm kind of just making this up as I go along because we didn't write it down anywhere, but what is the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association, and what, if anything, does it mean to us? What do we get from it? So here we go. This might be the first, this is the first one. So the plan went into action finally. The three Madison Unitarian Universalist congregations were ready to welcome a mystery guest, and Prairie would be the first. And so it was that my ancient Honda and I made a trip to the nearest Federal Express store to pick up today's mystery guest. As I patiently waited for the FedEx employee to find my delivery, I pictured it being packed securely in a pretty big box. I knew that with the packing material, the total weight of this package was almost 40 pounds. I also know that I could lift 40 pounds with one hand even, because when I go on those long hikes in the Southwest, my suitcase gets uncomfortably close to 50 pounds. Out of the back room appeared the FedEx employee, but he wasn't carrying a box. A suitcase of sorts, a large briefcase with many stickers on it saying where it's been. I thought, I don't think that's mine, I said to him. It's too flat. I'm thinking this. Then I thought, maybe the chalice is collapsible. But it was mine, ours. It was Prairie's, addressed to us. And the stickers from all over the upper Midwest made me think of trunks traveling around the world in the days when upper class people took the tour of Europe, maybe other parts of the world as well. So I brought this odd container to Prairie, where Dan, our faithful administrator, and I unpacked it, read the page of directions about lighting it, which involved sand, salt, sterno, and rubbing alcohol, and apparently Larry Hazlett and Carl Wacker, too. Well, not quite knowing what to expect, that would be Dan, I wasn't going to get near it, lit it. The directions said that the initial flame could be as high as 12 to 15 inches, but it hasn't gotten that high. Nevertheless, it was and is impressive. I stood transfixed. I had not expected to be moved by this traveling chalice. and yet I was, I am. Seeing this special chalice that traveled all this way to our space fills me with awe and delight. The traveling chalice is a thing of wonder to me. Maybe this is a little bit of what the seekers of the Holy Grail felt. By the way, the word grail means the object of an extended or difficult quest. That won't surprise you. But if you look up Holy Grail, you'll just find the word grail. I wanted to have a conversation with the chalice. Hence the title of today's Reflections in Your Order of Service. But later I thought that might be a little odd to stand up here and converse with the chalice. So I'm not doing exactly that. And the title on my reflections is simply Traveling Chalice. This chalice has been traveling since August of 2017. Every single Sunday since then, since August, this chalice has been in a different Unitarian Universalist church somewhere in our Mid-America region. By the time this year's General Assembly begins in Kansas City, Missouri, on June 20th, this chalice will have been in 10 different states. The last stop before us was in, remember the name of the fellowship, probably on there, but it's in Bloomington Hills, Michigan. One of its purposes in traveling throughout our Mid-America region is to be an ambassador for General Assembly, but more about that in a few minutes. And no, Mitchie, no one seemed to be able to give me any information about who made it. The question I really wanted answered was, does this one only get to travel, or has it actually been at General Assembly and been used for worship services or business meetings? How did the flaming chalice become the symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith? Well, it happened at the beginning of World War II, but the story really starts much earlier than that, because chalices, also known as cups or flagons, are referred to in many ancient manuscripts and engraved on ancient altars all over the world. Jesus drank from a chalice at his last Passover Seder, what we usually call the Last Supper. And that's the chalice that is the Holy Grail, capital H, capital G, that ever so many knights from Wales and England have set out to find. Probably most important to us, though, as Unitarian Universalists, in the telling of the Flaming Chalice story, was not Jesus, but a man named Jan Hus, H-U-S. A Czechoslovakian Catholic priest. Have you ever heard of him? I actually got to see a statue in Prague that's in honor of him. A Czechoslovakian Catholic priest who was way ahead of his time. He was born in 1367 and executed in 1415. His thinking was Reformation thinking, except that he lived and died over 100 years before the Reformation. Reformation dates are roughly 1517 to 1648. Hus is important to us as Unitarian Universalists because he was a free thinker. We go way, way back. And he has an important connection to this subject of chalices. Jan Hus was burned at the stake for suggesting, among other things, that the communion chalice used by the Catholic Church should be shared with the laity, not just used by the priests. The other part of our story, our chalice story, of course, is the flame, which has its own history and is also ancient. Think of the lights we put up at Christmas and Hanukkah. Eternal flames, such as the one at Arlington National Cemetery. Candles that are lit all over the world, in cathedrals, temples, mosques, and meeting houses on many different days at different times of the year. And sadly, think of candles that are lit at the scenes of tragedies, most recently, of course, in Parkland, Florida, and in so many places where there have been mass homicides, including Ground Zero in New York City. So now we have these two pieces, the flame and the chalice, both of which draw us, compel us to moments of reflection, meditation, and understanding. Fast forward to 1941 and the uniting of these two elements, the chalice and the flame. There are two central characters in this part of our story, Hans Deutsch, an Austrian artist, and the Reverend Charles Joy, J-O-Y, what a great name, a Unitarian minister who at that time was executive director of the USC, the Unitarian Service Committee, and one of the forerunners of our current UUSC, Unitarian Universal Service Committee. The USC was brand new. No one had ever heard of it in 1941. It was formed in Boston to help Eastern Europeans, Unitarians, yes, but also Jews, and anyone who needed it to help those trying to escape Hitler and the Nazis. Deutsch had been living in Paris in the 1930s, but when the Nazis invaded Paris in 1940, Deutsch had to flee quickly. He had drawn many critical cartoons of Hitler and was a marked man. Deutsch ended up in Portugal, where he met Reverend Joy. Joy was in charge of a secret network of spies, agents, couriers fighting fascism. Deutsch ended up working for the USC, even though, as he wrote to Reverend Joy, "I am not what you may actually call a believer, but if your kind of life is the profession of your faith, as it is, I feel sure, then religion, ceasing to be magic and mysticism, becomes active, really useful social work. And this religion is one to which even a godless fellow like myself can say wholeheartedly, yes." Well, if you are trying to do the right thing in the larger world of peace and justice, and in this instance, if you are trying to fight fascism, being an unknown organization is a big handicap. If you are going to engage in cloak and dagger activities, then you have to be trusted by people in a world complicated by the barriers of language, nationality, and religion. If you can't be trusted, well, your life could very well be in danger. Charles Joy was looking for ways to be taken seriously by those in this cloak and dagger world. He needed to prove that the Unitarian Service Committee, however new it might be, was also legitimate and trustworthy. And one way to do this was to have a symbol he could use on all the paperwork that went along with working clandestinely. Thus it was that Joy asked Deutsch to create a symbol that they could use on documents, and this is a quote of Reverend Joyce, "to make them look official, to give dignity and importance to them, and at the same time to symbolize the spirit of our work. When a document may keep a man out of jail, give him standing with governments and police, it is important that it look important." So Hans Deutsch put pen to paper, actually I believe it was pencil, plus ink, though I'm not quite sure how that works. And voila, a seal for papers and a badge for agents moving refugees to freedom, as Dan Hotchkiss says in our Flaming Chalice pamphlet. And the rest is history. But only since 1941, which in the overall scheme of things wasn't that long ago, Hotchkiss reminds us that in that short period of time, the Flaming Chalice became a symbol of Unitarian Universalism all around the world. Well, for me, the most rewarding, meaningful part of this story is a validation, an affirmation of my most deeply held beliefs, because this story of Hans Deutsch and Charles Joy and the creation of our Flaming Chalice was, from the very beginning, about a life of service, a life of working to heal a broken world. Hans Deutsch, when he designed that Flaming Chalice, had never seen a Unitarian or Universalist church, or even heard a sermon about Unitarianism or Universalism. But he understood intuitively freedom and oppression, and of course, lived out the full meaning of those words. What does our flaming chalice stand for today? What do you think of when we light it each Sunday? Here are some of the descriptive words and phrases that I thought of when I asked myself these questions, and in no particular order. Freedom, optimism, hope, the interdependent web, interconnectedness, unity, saying life, saying yes to life, to truth, to love. Affirmation of Unitarian and Universalist visions and ideals, community, centering. So much of that is expressed in that first song we sang this morning, Let Freedom Span Both East and West. Michael Bandy and Eric Stein, the two authors of Whitewater, Today's Story for All Ages, wrote this in their author's notes. What we learned from our childhoods is that by embracing the gifts of imagination and courage, we can blast beyond the impossible and ultimately achieve anything. Every time the chalice is lit, somewhere in this world, in a big, medium-sized, or small Unitarian Universalist congregation or gathering, this is what we are affirming. Perhaps what I love best about the chalice's history, then, is the fact that its story is all about social action and social justice. There have been different designs of the chalice since Reverend Joy and Hans Deutsch created it in the early 1940s. They're up here, some of them, if you want to see them. Our Transylvanian cousins still use the chalice they've always used that depicts a serpent and a dove. Why? Because they represent wisdom and peace. In the early 2000s, you might have found a different design of the flaming chalice on the newsletters of some Unitarian Universalist congregations. And I think the Converses might know about this one. They might know what it's supposed to symbolize at any rate. You can't really see it from back there. But there's a bowl and a leaf, a rippled bowl holding a single-lobed leaf, stem down. The bowl and the leaf are always green in these depictions, but you can still recognize the flaming chalice symbol. Anyone know what this version was designed to represent? Yeah, the green sanctuary. I think Prairie was part of that.
We were one of the first.
That's what I thought. Prairie is one of the first. According to Andrea Greenwood and Mark Harris in their book, An Introduction to the Unitarian and Universalist Traditions, between 2002 and 2010, more than 10% of the UUA's member congregations have completed the program and achieved accreditation as green sanctuaries. This program represents the degree to which science, theology, and religious practice are entwined for Unitarian Universalists. If you pay a lot of attention to the UU Service Committee, the Unitarian UUSC, you might notice that their designs, they've used several different designs of the chalice through the years. Not every congregation lights a chalice. Some of you know that I go up to Sauk City, as does Robin Proud. We are associate speakers or something up there. How many of you know that the Free Congregation of Sauk County is the fourth UU congregation in this area? They don't light a chalice. They do, however, light a candle. Now, I don't know if they think that lighting a chalice would be more ritual than they want, or they just haven't gotten around to getting a chalice. I should ask them. At First Unitarian Society here in Madison, which is my home UU congregation, Max Gabler was my minister when I first went there. I know Max never lit a chalice, might have lit a candle once in a while. But when the current senior minister arrived, Michael Schuller, who's retiring this year, when he arrived in the mid-1980s, he introduced the chalice lighting ritual. Not without controversy, though. I won't name her, because some of you might know her. I think she's died. But there was one woman in particular who strongly objected. She somehow equated the ritual of lighting the flaming chalice with Nazi Germany, from which she had escaped. So it, nothing is ever simple, is it? Earlier I mentioned that, among other things, the traveling chalice is a promotional tool for General Assembly, and as much as we, or at least I, hate the word branding, we do live in a world where it is important. Now, it's not as important as it was to Charles Joy and Hans Deutsch, who were trying to keep people from being killed by having the right branding, but we do our own version of branding. So, every year, prior to General Assembly, the traveling chalice hits the road as an ambassador and a clarion call for congregations to spread the word about General Assembly. General Assembly is our annual gathering of UUs from across the world. It's in a different place every year. It's always in the third or fourth week of June. It's June 20th to the 24th this year. It's where we conduct the business of the association. And this year, because it's in Kansas City, Missouri, I think it's a drivable trip. I will probably drive. So I'm hoping to get some of you enthused about GA. Registration begins March 1st, and you get a pretty good discount on your registration fees if you register before May 1st. Patty, are we still paying at least one? Well, we would only have one delegate, because we're only entitled, because of our size, to one delegate plus me. So we do pay registration fee. And now, am I correct? We can do this online, on off-site, correct? Streaming, Phyllis, I think you were our delegate last year?
Yes.
But you never left the comfort of your living room, or wherever your computer is.
No.
So Phyllis is our denominational affairs chair, under which General Assembly falls. So if you have any questions about going to GA, talk to me or to Phyllis. Oh, and there are others in the room. Barb, I know, has been to GA. Kathy's been to a GA. Gary's been to a GA. And Mary's been. And Cheryl, of course. Oh, and Tom. Wow. All right. Great. I lost track. I know I've been to more than 20. Most recently, last summer's in New Orleans. But the first official one I attended was in Milwaukee in 1988. Apparently, the first one that I actually attended, though, was in Columbus, Ohio, in the early 80s when I was a member of First Unitarian's choir. I didn't know I was at General Assembly, Barb. There was all that partying, on the bus. And Ellsworth, our beloved choir director, never made it very clear. I tell you this somewhat shamefacedly as an illustration of how insular our congregations can be, even the big ones, and how remiss we are when it comes to honoring and acknowledging our place in the larger organization. Huh. We're such a small denomination, association, if you prefer that word, small but powerful. And will be even more powerful and influential in the world the more that we join with other Unitarian Universalist congregations to do the work of the world. And it is an incredible morale booster to be at General Assembly and to know that there are other congregations out there doing what we do, although, of course, in many different ways. The first few times that I was at GA, I was in a sort of a trance most of the time, being surrounded by so many others from the family. There was lots of hugging. There's always lots of hugging. There's always lots of gathering around together at mealtimes, also lots of quiet talk in twos and threes. There's lots of laughing, and there's lots of crying. More than once, I have shared hotel rooms with four or five others. I think six in a room is my record. And once I shared a room with Pat Watkins, who was a dearly beloved member of this congregation. Through all these general assemblies, none of us thought about Virginia much, the state of Virginia, which I'm taking that line from a wonderful children's book, The Relatives Came by Cynthia Ryland. When we are at general assembly, none of us thinks too much about Virginia or Wisconsin or wherever we're from. Reference that earlier reading, Baruch Atah, Illinois. Because we are so busy hugging and eating and breathing together, as Ryland puts it, and going, going to meetings and worship services and getting to know each other better and learning about how other congregations do things and gathering so much wisdom from others about how to make this strange tradition of ours, Unitarian Universalism, stronger, and how to get the word about us to others who probably believe what we believe and just don't know it yet. Better yet, they don't know that we exist. General Assembly can be overwhelming, expensive, noisy, confusing, just as frustrating as any other family reunion. But General Assembly can also be uplifting, challenging, energizing. These gatherings can fill your heart with gratitude that we exist, that within this church, this denomination, this association, you are encouraged to be a free thinker, unencumbered by doctrine or creed, bound together not by someone telling you what to believe and how to act, but bound together by love, compassion, community, and the search for truth and justice. For me, despite all the challenges involved in getting to a General Assembly, and despite all of the frustrations with our Unitarian Universalist Association, every time I attend a GA family reunion, I feel that we have moved as an organization a little bit closer to unveiling the bonds that bind each to all. If you want to look at a couple of programs from the last two General Assemblies, feel free, they are up here. I just ask that you try not to walk away with them or that you return them if you do walk away with them. I think that this year will be an especially exciting time to be a part of General Assembly because we will actively and intentionally be struggling to figure out how to end systemic racism within our own institution. I gave you the words and phrases that I thought of when answering the question, what do you think of when we light the chalice? Well, here are some others taken from the UUA website. No particular order again. Sharing, generosity, sustenance, love, the light of reason, the warmth of community, and the flame of hope. One final thought that occasionally goes through my head when the chalice is lit, I should make a wish on that chalice flame. The same way we do with candles on a birthday cake or we do when, the wishbone of a turkey. Just one wish. What would it be? In a UU collection of meditations titled How We Are Called, Lisa Friedman ponders that question. She writes, if you had but one wish, what would it be? Take your time thinking about it. So much is at stake. An end to all suffering. A stop to all violence. A solution to poverty and all of its ills. Would you wish for love? For forgiveness? Or for healing? Would you wish the world joy? Or the wisdom to change? Would you wish to understand everything? Or to know less than you do. Take your time thinking about it. So much is at stake. For a wish is a thought. And a thought is an idea. An idea leads to commitment. And a commitment cries out for action. A wish can be a dangerous thing, something daring. And it need not be witnessed by the stars to come true. Let us be glad that we are not given just one wish in our lives, but many. Let us be grateful, not for wishful thinking, but for the discipline of the thoughtful wishing that can lead to change. What would your wish be? Friedman concludes. So go ahead, make one wish every time we light the chalice. Then work on turning that wish into a thought, the thought into an idea, the idea into commitment, and commitment into action. That's some of what a flaming chalice offers us every week. And now it's getting bigger. And it offers us also affirmation, community, love, unity, hope, freedom. So I will now be carrying this, lit, of course, over to First Unitarian Society. Because they get it next. It's not very far. It's a little slippery outside. And I get somewhat distressed when people say, it's in Kansas City. Who wants to go to Kansas City? Well, there's plenty to do and explore in every place. Okay, it's not New Orleans, but... the one that Deutsch designed did look like a cross, more like a cross. And I didn't want to take the time to read a quote from Charles Joy about that, because he thought that might be questioned, even in 1941. But as Joy said, you know, the 99% of the people we're helping right now are Jewish, not Christian, and we do come from the Christian tradition.
Right.
So even though it did look, and you still see designs that, well, the one on, that doesn't look like a cross, never mind. But there are still some that look like a cross, not intentionally. These are the words of Unitarian Universalist minister Mark Morrison Reed. The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens, and our strength is renewed. And we're going to say together the words of number 456, which we don't use every week, but it seemed appropriate. Oops,
it's very appropriate.
To extinguish the flame. Well, which extinguished itself. But we can still read it. We extinguished this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Go in peace. Stay for Soup Sunday. Greet your neighbor.